And welcome back to Coast AM, 523 radio stations now and getting stronger. Good to be with you again. Have you ever wondered what the spirit world tried to do on the other side? What they learned, what they discovered? Well, James Von Prague is our very special guest, and we'll be talking with James in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. James Von Prague, he's one of the world's most famous mediums of our time. He has a unique ability to communicate with spirits of men, women, animals who have died. James has spoken to thousands of people through his lectures, tours, and demonstrations. And of course, as you know, a regular guest here on Coast to Coast. And he has been on numerous television and radio shows, currently one of the executive producers of one of my favorite shows, Ghost Whisperer. Here he is, James Von Prague. James, welcome back.
Thank you, George. Nice to talk to you and to your listeners. It's great to be back. Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure. And you never stop, my friend. My gosh.
Gotta change the world.
Everywhere. How's Ghost Whisperer? Yep. Ghost Whisperer still rolling along?
Yes, we're going to be starting our fifth season in August.
That's great.
We just finished our fourth, and it's in 400 markets around the world.
What is the fascination with the other side, James?
Well, I think everybody, every human shares two common experiences. One is birth, and we've been through that, and we know a little bit about that. And the other is death, and every single human being is curious as to what happens after you leave the physical body. So I think that is the fascination, the curiosity. One wants to know the answers to that.
And in some cases, an obsession. I know I'm getting, the older I get, James, the more obsessed I get with trying to figure out what's on the other side.
Yeah, I've been obsessed with death since I was born, which is so true. A lot of people, and it's funny that I'm doing this type of work, but a lot of people have that obsession about cemeteries, death, anything to do with death. A lot of Scorpio people, and Scorpio rules mediumship. I don't know, some people just are that way. I don't know what it is. It's just, it's interesting. I find it interesting.
Tell me about your new work.
My new book is called Unfinished Business, What the Dead Can Teach Us About Life. It's my eighth book, and it took me 25 years to write this book, because what I did was I saved up many of the messages that I have received from spirit through the past 25 years for a book which my guides once told me, we want you to write a book about the other side from our point of view to the people on the earth to help them live a healthy life. A manual, if you will, for living life. So I kept all of these messages, the varied messages for all these years. After my sessions, I'd go in the back and I'd write down, because I wouldn't remember them. So I'd write everything down, and I kept a box full of these messages. And this book is made up of all these incredible messages that Spirit has shared with me about regret, about guilt, about love, about fear, from their point of view, the Spirit's point of view. From when they passed over to the Spirit world, what it's like to look back at their lives, that they lived on the earth, and regrets, the should-haves, would-haves, and could-haves. And this book is really about how to help the living not to have should-have, would-haves, and could-haves. So when they pass over, a kind of a clean conscience.
Do these messages come easy for you now?
There comes a point where you develop the mediumship after 25 years. It's not easy, but you certainly know, you can decipher easier, I guess, would you say, more of the energy, and you can tell what is stagnant energy, what is easier, the more emotional the spirit is, the more emotional the receiver is, the stronger the message. You can tell when someone is completely blocking, skeptical, they'll not believe it, not open, fearful. I can read that. As I progress in my own development, I'm beginning to see more energetically the body, the human body, the person I'm reading, them on an energetic level, so I can see what the blockages are in their body as far as emotional blockages, physical ailments. So I'm also starting to, you know, I'm evolving also with my abilities.
You've almost become the new Edgar Cayce.
It's interesting, but I just came back from Atlantic City, and I did a reading there, 1,400 people in the audience, and one lady received a reading and her message, and she said, you know, James, back in 1998, in the New Yorker Hotel in New York, you told me that one of your guides was saying that my stomach had problems, and the white liquid I was drinking was not helping. And she validated that she was drinking Maalox, and she had kidney problems. And she said no one could find it, but when I told her what it was, it's exactly what it was after she went. She told the doctor, and they found exactly what it was kidney problems.
James, You say that there is no death. I want you to explain that.
Sure. I believe, from my experiences, that we are energy. I think Einstein proved that as well, that we are energy, molecules that are moving at a certain rate of speed in this dimension. I think we live in a multidimensional vast universe. And I think that this three-dimensional world we live in, I think that we are energetic beings and we have physical bodies. I think that the spirit is of a higher energy, if you will. And I think at the time when the physical body dies, that the spirit, the energy, the spirit is released and goes to that other dimension, if you will. So I think you can't kill energy. I think energy changes form, if you will.
Merely a transition, just a stepping stone?
Merely a transition, much easier than people make it. I think it's incredible how obsessed people do get about death and fear it so much, when really there is no such thing as death. It's just stepping out of the body. I had a near-death experience three years back, and it was one of the easiest things I've ever experienced. And maybe I had that so I could teach people about it, but I'm telling you, it was very natural. And spirit has come back many, many times, thousands and thousands of times, and said, listen, it's a very natural occurrence. We've done it many, many, many times in previous lives. It's nothing to fear.
James, when we dream, it seems very real when we're in the dream. Then we wake up, and in some cases we realize, oh my gosh, that was only a dream. And you realize it was almost like a theater, a show, a play. Is death in some respect like that? Are we in a dream state where it just is endless?
I think you could say, George, that it's a different level of consciousness. So a different state of consciousness, if you will. And I think that when you leave the physical vibration, the physical dimension, when you enter that dimension of the spirit, there's an opening of perception. And it's a different level of consciousness. It's more of an awareness, if you will. And it seems to be more of a wholeness of perception. The experience they have described as being, and myself also, the near-death experience, it's the same thing, that there's a sense of oneness, that you are completely aware that you are all one. There's a connection. I describe it very much like we are a thread. And when you pass into that dimension, you see that you're a thread to the universal tapestry. And you're part of that tapestry. You're a vital part of that tapestry. There's that sense that you are not separated. The biggest illusion that we have in this three-dimensional world is that we are separate from one another. When you pass into the other dimension, you realize you are one with everyone.
I'm in St. Louis for a couple of weeks, James, before I head off to Detroit, and I was looking at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch today, which is our only newspaper, and for some reason, I open it up to the obituary column, and I'm looking at all these people who have passed on just in this city in their little pictures. Some of them are 25 years old. Some of them are 85 years old, and it's just endless, and I'm just looking at this, and I'm just... I don't know. I think I'm just I'm in a trance state looking at all these people who all had lives. They all had families, that some of them had loved ones. Maybe some of them did not. And then I'm trying to just picture what it's like for them on the other side now.
Well, you have to remember that, number one, if we could take it from a soul perspective, that, and it's difficult. You know, we're looking at it, obituaries, reading things, get emotionally involved. But if we look at it from a soul perspective, that this is our schoolroom, that this earth is our schoolroom full of many lessons to learn, and that some souls come back for 25 years worth of class, and some come back for 80 years. Some just have to go through the birth experience in order to fulfill their agreement, if you will. So it's all different from a soul's experience. A soul can never die. It's just the experiences they need in the physical body, in the physical dimension. And then they get to go back home. These are classes that we take in order to evolve spiritually. It's not easy to, but I mean, if you take it on a different perspective, you can understand it a little bit.
Why does it seem that the dearly departed, the loved ones and one's family, seem to come back to us, at least for a little bit?
Well, it's exactly why I wrote this book, and I wrote the book for this reason, that Spirit wanted me to write this exact book, Unfinished Business, because of that. Many, many spirits, number one, want their loved ones to know that they're all right, that they're not dead. You know, every spirit goes to their funerals. Everyone visits the memorial services. They want their loved ones to know they're fine. They're not dead. They're not in that box. They're not burned up. they're very much alive, even more so than they were in the physical body. They're much, much more alive. It seems also that, and the reason I wrote this book, was because every single spirit that I've dealt with, at least 99% of them, have regrets, have guilt, have those should'haves, would'haves, and could'haves, and they want to come back and let their loved ones know they're sorry, to please forgive them. And they want to know, I wish I could have loved you more. If only I knew then what I know now, things would have been, my life would have been a lot different. And that's why I wrote this book, for that very, very reason, because of all those regrets the spirits have.
James, do these spirits somehow stand next to people, humans, people who are alive? Is it almost like they're screaming with their mouths open and they're trying to get us to hear them?
A very good movie was the movie Ghost, which depicted it extremely well. With Patrick Swayze and Whoopi Goldberg, because that's really what it's like when I see it. It's a spirit right next to the individual, screaming at them. But really, when this person first passes into spirit, they need to learn how to communicate. And the way they communicate, they find, is if they use the emotion, their emotion, and project a thought with the emotion to their living relative, it's the best way to get through to them. You have to remember, the relative is crying, they're upset, they're angry, their grief and grief-stricken. So the spirit has, newly arrived spirit, must get through all of those walls in order to let their loved one know they're okay. Not easy to do.
This guilt, is it also on the part of not only the living, but the dead?
Oh, for sure. There are many stories, many messages in the book that talk about guilt, and that the guilt you carry with you into spirit. And it stays with you a little bit also within your mindset, this guilt. I wish I did that more. I could have done that. I could have prevented all of that hardship for my loved one if only I had done this. Much of it is guilt that they carry over.
I mean, people beat themselves up over this sometimes, James.
Very true. Very true. In life, in the physical world, they beat themselves up. Imagine when you're in a dimension where there is no time, where it's made up of just mental thought, and they have to relive in a way in their mind all the things they did and they didn't do on the earth. A lot of guilt. Imagine. I'd have to relive that over and over again in their mind.
Is it haunting for them?
Very, very much so. Just like I talk about in the book about addictions, people who have addictions. I say to people, the brain is part of the physical body. The mind is part of the spirit. And in the mind, there is addictions, there's sensing, there's guilt, there's regret. All these things, these games we play with ourselves mentally, that crosses over with us. We are exactly what we think when we pass into those dimensions, exactly what we think. So if we carry with us mental anguish, guilt, regret, addictions, it stays with us until we can forgive ourselves, until we can realize that we're really just learning. We're just learning beings.
Do they sometimes regret the fact that, let's say they died in a car accident and they just did something stupid in the car and they got killed. They sometimes regret that and kick themselves over that?
Oh, sure. I've had a lot of that happen. I've had a lot of teenagers, actually. I've had a lot of people. I've had a lot of suicides, too, where they've regretted it, where they didn't think, you know, after they're going to be out of their pain. If they completed suicide, they'd be out of their pain and be finished, and not only to realize that not only are they still around their pain, but now they have to deal with the grief the parents left behind, the family members left behind. They got to feel all that information and deal with that. And they don't get out easy. Kids have been driving in a car accident or driving drunk or whatever it was. Kids with overdoses. I've had a lot of drug overdose cases. And they had a lot of regret about that. Now, some cases you could say, well, that was a soul's experience. They signed up for it. Yes, but there were others where free will was involved, and they shouldn't have done that.
James, how much does grief play into all this?
Grief plays a lot from both sides. I mean, people would say to me when I do these demonstrations of spirit communication, you know, I've tried so hard to get through to my loved one. Why won't they come to me? Why won't they come to me? You know, I was married to my husband for 40 years. Why won't he come to me? And I say to them, well, you're trying too hard. You're in so much grief that you're actually blocking your husband from coming through. He can't get through when you have walls of grief. So that does play a part. And in that grief, of course, is the guilt and so forth, the regret.
Do you have help from the spirit world in terms of individual spirits, or is this direct to the dearly departed?
Great question, George. It's both. In that, when I work, I have a guide, several guides, a team of guides, if you will. I have a doctor who works with me. I have a Catholic nun who works with me. I have an American Indian who works with me. I have an Egyptian man who actually works with me. And I have several other guides. And, you know, guides change also depending on the type of work you're doing and so forth. I get the information from the guides help to bring through the individual spirit who wants to contact the person in the audience. So that person in spirit must work with my guides. And the guides will say to them, you need to project the image stronger to James. You need to get on this vibration of level to send this to James so he can hear you in his head. So they work with that spirit and teach them really how to communicate. Because for them, it's probably brand new. They never had this experience before.
Were these guides sensitive from the get-go, or did they need to learn this as well?
The guides, which I've attracted to me when I first started doing my work, they've been with me ever since I started. But there are definite guides that change along with my evolution. They change. This doctor who works with me was also very much a medium when he was alive on the earth. And it just depends. It just depends on what you do in your life. You will attract that teacher to you who will really influence you to use your innate gifts the best you can. Whether it's an artist or an accountant, it doesn't matter. You will attract that.
You have touched a lot of lives with what you do in your life and in your career. Is there an event that truly touched you to the point where almost overcome with emotion?
Oh, George, every time I work, I'm overcome with emotion. Every single time. I would say some of them. I mean, there's so many different readings. I just did this one in Atlantic City this past weekend, which was so emotional because this gentleman came through for this. I think he must have been a 75-year-old man in the audience. And it was his brother that came through. And the brother was talking about Brooklyn, New York. And he was showing me a brownstone and a fire escape. And he said that him and his brother used to sit in the fire escape and throw coins at the cars passing below. And he said, my brother took good care of me, and I want to thank him for always looking out for me. He thought for me, and I didn't know what that meant. And the brother in the audience said, thank you, I appreciate you saying that. My brother passed many years ago. He was mentally retarded and couldn't think for himself. And now his brother's coming back completely fine, and wanted to thank him. Another experience I had several months ago, a man was in the audience, and he was a biker man, a biker guy with leather on, the whole bit, Harley Davidson.
Yeah.
And there was his dead son standing next to him. And you could see the death got to him. And his son's name was Michael. I said, I want to tell my dad that my head didn't hurt when I hit the ground. So I relayed that message. And the father said, I just don't believe this. This is incredible. My son died skydiving. And I said, well, your son wants me to tell you that he appreciates the tattoo you put on your chest of him, his name. The guy rolls up his shirt, and it says, my beloved son, Michael, all across his chest. Now, what do you say to something like that? And then, wait to hear this one. Then 5 minutes after that, a little girl in the audience raises her hand, and she said, Mr. Van Prague, I was with you 2 months ago with my mother and father who are here. You brought through my deceased sister. And at that time, you told us that Papa was ready to see a grandmother, that she was ill. And then the father spoke up and said, yes, Mr. Van Prague, my mother was ill, and you said Papa's ready. And he wants to see her. Let her know it's okay to pass. After your show, we went home to Mom and told her Papa's ready to see her. It's okay to go. She died 10 minutes later.
Oh, my God.
Now, what do you say to this person in the audience? Well, thank God, the reaction. And it's just so emotional because it's
just
emotional.
Yeah, it really is.
But, you know, me being the messenger, George, I have to be like a doctor. I've got to be very objective because if I'm not objective, I can't give the message clearly. If my emotion gets in the way, I will block the message. See? So
James, I want to talk with you when we come back about just what this pulls out of you. Edgar Cayce had once said that it was some of the most draining experiences of his life. So stick with us. James Van Prague, our special guest tonight here on Coast to Coast. His latest work, Unfinished Business, What the Dead Can Teach Us About Life. It's something that all of us think about at one time or another, isn't it? I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we have James Van Prague as our guest tonight, author of his latest work, Unfinished Business, world-renowned medium. Last hour of the show with James, we'll take your phone calls, but we'll be back with more in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, James Van Prague with us. James, Marianne Winkowski, Jennifer Love Hewitt, both of them have said on this program that you possess incredible energy. Edgar Cayce, when he would do readings, felt drained. Eventually, I think it was his own undoing. Does this ever affect you?
Very interesting. Great question, George. Great question. And I think it's an important question because a lot of people want to get into mediumship, but they don't realize what it entails and the proper way of developing your mediumship. I was fortunate enough to meet a man from England, the British medium, who knew the exact way, the correct way, the techniques, if you will, how to properly develop. And I worked for many years in learning how to open up my chakras, the energy centers of the body, and become very sensitized, how to open them up correctly, run the energy up the body, and how to close down when I was not working. That's very, very important to save that vital energy, because if you don't open and close correctly, you will be depleted when you work. And there are a lot of people out there now who do this type of work who have no clue the proper way to open and close down. And if you don't, it can affect you, it can harm you physically. And if you do it for a long, long time, for many years, it definitely will. And I've seen it. I've seen it do that to people. I personally will get drained if I overdo it, if I overwork. I used to do private readings that you do 2 a day. If I did any more than 2 or 3 a day, I would be completely exhausted.
Jeez.
Because they use the vital energy. They use your energy. You have to remember they're in a different vibration, and they're really kind of plugging into your energy in order to stay down on this level. They need to lower themselves down to this level, and they kind of plug into you to stay down here. So they're using a lot of your energy to do that, to sustain themselves.
How do you recharge? Do you sleep, or what do you do?
How do I recharge? Good question. I will sleep, of course, meditate, sleep. I take vacations as far as vacations. When I say vacation, I mean a break. I'll take a break.
Yeah, but you work on your breaks.
I ride my breaks. I do. Yes, I do. But I don't do readings anymore privately. I give myself enough time where I can rejuvenate, recharge. When I do group demonstrations, when I visit different cities, I give myself enough time to be able to recharge. And then I give it my all when I work.
Not every spirit is enlightened. I mean, what if they were bad individuals during their human life? Do they still try to attach themselves to you, for example? And that's got to be very draining and dangerous.
Another great question, and it's a multi-question, because number one, when I do this work, I find that if there is a spirit who is a low-level spirit, if you will, unevolved spirit, I usually will not bring them through because of the low vibration. And I do protect myself. I have my guides to protect me. I do a whole meditation before I start working with light. And some of those on the lower levels won't come near me. They don't come near it. People who I work with who are very, like I said earlier, skeptical, hard to believe, it's very, very difficult. It takes a lot of energy to open them up. Likewise, a spirit who was a non-believer and is trying to get through, sometimes it also takes a lot of energy, believe it or not. The ones who are the darker ones, like Marianne, really, that's her thing. She really gets into the earthbound spirits, like a ghost whisperer. I'm really more involved with those who pass into the light. Those are who I communicate with, where it's much better than the ones at the lower levels.
There is a friend of mine.
Let me just say, George, also let me interrupt, I'm sorry. But even in living life, in physical life, when people are around certain people, they're psychic vampires. You know what it's like to be around people that are exhausting. You're like, I can't be around them.
It's the worst.
It's the same type of thing, if you will.
They can clear out a room, James.
Yes, they certainly can.
And in some cases, they don't know they're doing it. They don't know that they have this horrible effect on people.
That's right. They're energy suckers. And they just, and I don't think they mean it. They're not conscious of it, like you said. But we all have had that experience, and they just need your energy. They deplete you. And, they can be draining, you bet.
I mean, I can feel your energy coming through these broadcast lines right now. So you imagine being around someone who's got negative energy, and people just want to get away from that person. Yeah. They want to clear out.
My energy lately, the past 2 years, well, 3 years since my near-death experience, has really elevated. And now I find I go through computers very quickly, batteries very quickly, lights flash on and on more quickly. I have a lot of electromagnetic stuff going on, much more than it used to 3 years before.
Do you take a lot of supplements? Do you eat differently?
Are
you a
health food person? Yes. I work out at least 3 days a week. I have a trainer to make sure I will work out because I cannot rely on myself to do that.
You need to be pushed, right?
That's exactly right. And I do take vitamin supplements every day. I take them on for 2 weeks, off for 2 weeks. And I watch what I eat. And I watch what I drink. I try to drink as much water as possible. And I find that really helps me a lot. And I try to sleep as much as possible, too. That does help me. It really does.
Yeah, it does. I think it helps set you in a different mindset. If your physical body is feeling good, especially for what you do, that mental ability is going to be perfected.
That's right. Well, the physical, mental, spiritual, and emotional are all the same, are all one. As far as I'm concerned, they all have to be in balance. Because if one of them are off balance, it throws everything else off balance. And I've seen that with my clients. When I see emotionally they're very upset and they're just distraught, eventually, if they don't take care of that, it will affect the physical vessel. And they will have disease or a sickness or some pain. That does happen. I've seen it over and over and over again.
A friend of mine spent the last 18 years or so not talking to his brother. Mm. They had a problem, and they fought over the mother. Mm. And one took care of the mother, James, the other did not. And, you know, my friend did. He spent his money to take care of his mother, and then she died. And they haven't spoken to each other in nearly 20 years.
Oh, that's horrible.
The day is going to come where I think one of them is going to pass on, and they're going to regret it for the rest of their lives.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that happens every day.
And that'll be unfinished business, won't it?
It's unfinished business. It's unfinished business. And I cannot tell you how clear the spirits have made it to say, clean up your stuff while you're still here on the earth. Say you forgive somebody. Take the high road. Look at it from a different perspective. Be better than them. You're learning something. You're teaching them something. You know, it's all energy. It's all energy, and it's what you give out. And if it's negative energy, this is interesting too, George. I find that, let's say those brothers, the one doesn't forgive the other, that negative energy would not only affect that relationship, but could affect relationships of people after that generation. That same energy will affect other generations.
Not only that, I think it affects both of them in their real life with other people.
That is correct.
I really do.
That is correct. Exactly right. It's a dark energy. It's an energy that's stagnant, and it does not let love flow. And love is our natural state of being. And when you have an energy which is based on fear, that whole thing is based on fear or love. That's all there is. So that unforgiving is fearful, and that's the ego getting involved. That's based with fear. And I think that in itself blocks many things from happening.
So if with unfinished business, one dies, one lives, let's say, who's the initiator? Who tries to make the first move to try to patch things up? Is it the spirit, or is it the person who's still living desperately trying to get a hold of his spirit?
From my experience, it is the spirit who, once they pass over to the spiritual realms and have their life review and feel and experience everything they've left on the earth and see how they didn't pass certain tests, and maybe one was with a family member, they will try very, very hard to influence in positive ways and let their loved one know they're sorry somehow, in some way. Many times I've seen the spirit come back and be a guide to the one left behind on the earth, some kind of a guide. My mother became one of my guides when she passed over. When she was living, she was an alcoholic, and she wasn't there for me in many, many parts of my life. And she felt very guilty about that when she passed to the spirit. And she chose to help me from the spiritual realms and to give me the love, the help, the assistance she could not do in life. And I find that very, very common.
You say that forgiveness is the most powerful spiritual tool we possess. I have a problem, let's say, forgiving someone who has hurt a member of family, for example. If God forbid, one of my children was harmed by someone, I'm not sure I could forgive them, James. Yet, I have had people tell me, or people who have had a daughter abducted and killed, let's say, they will forgive that person.
Yeah, yeah. It is not an easy thing to do. It is one of the hardest lessons that there is to forgive another human being. But it is indeed a act of compassion, and it's a loving act. It's a loving act. And we have to learn how to do that. In some lifetimes, we have to learn about forgiveness. It's an aspect of love, not an easy thing to do.
The fact that I can't do that, at least right now, in some cases, what does that mean about me? I mean, am I not perfected enough, or what?
No, I think that you will. I think that you could forgive at a certain level, but there's maybe the ego's in the way. There's the earth mind is in the way. No, I think that we're all human. We all have lessons to learn. It depends on each situation. It's hard to say.
I mean, I could forgive a lot. I could forgive a thief. I could a cheat, a liar. I could forgive a lot, but I just can't forgive someone who kills in cold blood.
Right. I understand that. It's unfortunate that that person killed someone in cold blood, and they obviously don't know that killing is not the right thing. It's not the right thing. But to, so in a way, it's almost, I say, if you could be in their shoes, walk in their shoes, and see from their point of view, in that they don't know that that's the wrong thing to do. Killing is the wrong thing. It's hard, but you have to have compassion for that poor soul who doesn't realize that was not the right thing to do. And what good are we if we can't forgive them? We're just as bad as they are in some ways.
You had mentioned addictions at some of the conferences that you speak at.
Yes.
And you point things out. In terms of addictions, I guess that's everything, right? Everything that people are addicted to.
Yeah, well, there are soft addictions, there are hard addictions. Hard addictions, of course, we recognize more as drug-related, alcohol-related, if you will, habitual types of things. Soft things as far as food addictions and so forth, certain behaviors. I think that one has to realize that, as I said earlier, in the mental mind, you have these addictions. And spirit has often said that it's better to let them go while you're still in the physical body, the physical vibration. You do not want to bring those physical addictions to the spirit, to the mental world, because you're so amplified in that mental world, that mental dimension, that it'll go over and over and over again in your head, this addiction, and there's nothing you can do about it because you're not the physical body anymore. You'll just be obsessed about smoking those cigarettes over and over again. It's almost like you have to burn out that experience. And I say, to burn out the experience is better in the physical than it is in the mental.
All right, how do you get over an addiction, regardless of what it is?
Well, I think you have to find out what's the cause of the addiction. What inside of you is not whole? What inside of you is not being loved? Because I do believe that some addictions, if not all of them, I think it's an aspect of the being which is not fully whole. And that there's a part of them is not loving themselves. There's an aspect of them which is not of love.
Right.
And an aspect of self-hatred, if you will. And I think that needs to be healed. That's what I think needs to happen.
They're running from something.
Why are they addicted? You know, they have to ask themselves, why am I doing this? Why is this behavior this certain way? What am I getting from this behavior? Also, you have to realize addictions, it puts people in an illusionary world where they don't have to deal with reality. So they can be escaping reality. They can be escaping their responsibilities.
Let's talk about some of the stories within your book, Unfinished Business. Give us one of your favorites.
Well, one of my favorites, which I saved up all these years, and it was a story about a young lady who was abused as a child. And she was abused by her uncle. And I find this to be very common, that there's a lot of abuse cases I've worked on. And in this particular case, I just found it very interesting because she hated her uncle her whole life, obviously. And he died in a car accident, which went over a mountain cliff. Yeah. And she was thrilled that he died that way. She never trusted men and so forth, and was able to. And in the reading, we found out that, because she thought this man just did this act without any conscience, and he just went ahead and did this. And we find out at the end, during this reading, this session, when she came to see me, the uncle came through. It was the last person that she ever wanted to speak with. But it was very vital that this uncle came through, not only for her benefit, but for his as well, from him in the spirit, for him to evolve spiritually. He was so obsessed about what he had done to this girl while he was alive, while he was in the physical body, that it bothered him so much in the spirit, he could not move on until she forgave him. We find out in the reading that it was said that he died in a car accident over the mountain, and he admits to her, no, it was not. It was a suicide. He drove himself off the mountain because he could not face the reality of what he did to her.
Couldn't take it anymore.
So for years, she thought it was an accident, and then she realized, and she actually has compassion once she realized he did find out. He did have some kind of conscience and realized what he did, and she forgave. She felt sorry for him, actually. She felt very, very sorry for him.
Reminds me a little bit of Edgar Allan Poe's Telltale Heart.
It's amazing you're saying this. Go on. It's incredible you're mentioning this.
You're going to have to tell me why in a second.
Oh, I will.
This is
wow,
a story.
You're psychic, George. You are psychic.
This is a story that I have followed all my life, and it there's so many lessons in this story. This one, of course, about an individual who kills someone and buries him under his floor, and he hears his heart beating and beating until it drove him mad. And to me, that's unfinished business.
That's unfinished business. He's obsessed with that. That's exactly right.
Now tell me why am I psychic? Why?
You're extremely psychic, and I will go on record as saying that. I right now have been working the past several years on a musical on Edgar Allan Poe.
You're kidding.
It's called Poe the Haunted Musical, which I've already done the music, but right now as we're speaking, I'm working on the lyrics. The opening of the show is people sitting in the audience, and it's almost a semi-darkness, and you hear the thumping of a heart. And as I'm on this book tour, I am writing the lyrics to the music on the plane. Where I write my best stuff is on the plane.
I love it.
And I was working on it yesterday, so there you go, on the exact thing about the heart thumping. So
gosh,
you do have some bit there, George. You're tuned in.
And there are no coincidences, as you know, James.
Coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous.
My gosh, my gosh. Where did we get the book, Unfinished Business? Is it out?
You know, it's out now, but the best way for people to get it would really be, I'm doing a book promotion on my website, which is vanprague.com, vanprague.com, and I'm giving away some readings for people. So if they want to go onto my site and they can get the book from there, it'll go right to Amazon. It goes right to Amazon.com, and they can also win a chance to have a reading with me. I'm giving several readings, and these are good readings of the phone. I spend a good hour with a person. So that's the best way to do it, I would say, is go to my website.
I'm truly amazed at your energy, James. I mean, every time I talk to you, you just get stronger and stronger as the night goes on. Most people, it goes the other way.
I'm a nightbird. I love the nightlife.
One of my favorites, she's a practicing witch. She's a good witch by the name of, you may know her, Fiona Horn. She lives out in L.A.
I've heard of her.
And I kid you not, years ago, I'm doing an interview with her, and now it's a joke between us. She fell asleep during my interview with her. I asked her a question. You could hear her just zing away.
I love it. I love talking about the subject. I mean, I love my work. I love enlightening people. I remember I love your energy. You're great. You love this stuff. And, you know, I was telling people tonight at a book signing, I said, you know, the hardest part of my job is not talking to dead people. That's kind of easy. The hardest part of my job is to see the person's potential in front of me, and they don't see it themselves. And
good
so
point.
To do this on the radio and talk to you about this and to your listeners, it really helps because it opens their minds and their hearts to this way of this perspective, if you will, to look at these things and question life and question death. And whether they believe in what I do or not, I don't care. It doesn't matter what people think of me. What someone thinks of me is none of my business. And I think it's great to do this. So I get very excited and joyful just, you know, sending out the message. That's what I've been sent back.
Well,
here to
and you're doing this like tonight. It's a three-hour radio interview. There aren't many people that can hold themselves for 3 hours. You know, we've got a few regular guests out there that can, but that's a long interview, James.
After four cities and a book tour, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. I mean, you're still on the West Coast. It's still in the, it's getting into the wee hours out there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just got back from Atlantic City yesterday. So I don't know what my body is doing, but I know what my mind is doing, so that's okay.
So you missed the earthquake, I take it.
I was right in the earthquake.
You were.
I went to bed last night at 6 o'clock in the evening, which I'd never done. And at 9:20, I was in a hotel, and it rattled the hotel, and I was awakened by it.
Mm-hmm. Did you know right away what it was?
Yeah, I knew right away it was an earthquake. Yes.
Yeah.
And 3 weeks earlier, we had one in Orange County, California, too, which I was also in a tall building, and all of a sudden it shook. So we've had two of them. I think there'll be some more, too. I think we'll have two more with the next couple of months.
I think you're right. And yep. I just left L.A. for a couple of weeks, so I keep dodging these things.
You're lucky. Well, I'm not afraid of them anymore. I'm really not. And I was here for the Northridge quake. And I write about that, the premonition of that.
That was a big one. We'll be back with more with James Van Prague as we talk about unfinished business, what the dead can teach us about life. Later on tonight, we'll open up the phone lines. You can share stories with us as well.